You've come to the beginning of another episode of the Kaleidoscope Podcast about everything Youth Initiative High School. Youth Initiative High School is a fiercely independent, multi-generational learning community offering an education that speaks to the whole human being. It was founded in 1996 and operates in Viroqua, Wisconsin, amongst the ridges and coulees of the Driftless region. I'm Matt, school administrator and host.
And I'm Logan, podcast producer and math teacher.
In this episode, we get the skinny from our greenhorns. Thoreau College fellows and YIHS interns Jennifer Fun Fact Finkelstein, Ina Swedish Fish Johnson, and Jacob He's Got What It Takes Roland chat with us and remind us what it's like to still have dreams. Welcome to the YHS Kaleidoscope Podcast. We've got three excellent guests today. We're going to have them introduce themselves right now. To my left is this young man.
My name is Jacob Roland. I am the 2025-2026 Thoreau College Youth Initiative High School Teaching Fellow. I was a student at Thoreau College 2020 to 2021 in their semester programs. I'm a new resident of Viroqua, having just graduated from college in Oberlin, Ohio, spending the year as an intern at Youth Initiative, teaching humanities classes. That's me.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Finkelstein. I was a student at Thoreau College this past semester, and part of the way through the semester, I started helping out in the math classes at Youth Initiative, and I guess formal title is math teaching intern, but through the fall and winter, I was taking a gap semester from UC Berkeley, where I was studying computer science and political science, and I hope to continue on as a teacher after I finish my degree.
I get really nervous to produce, like to say who I am. Why do I get nervous about that?
I don't know. You're a wonderful person. What's your name?
Ina.
Okay.
Ina.
And where do you come from?
I come from Sweden. That's the beautiful accent. If anybody was wondering.
I was just watching the Swedish curling team.
Oh, you did?
This weekend.
Yes.
Yeah. And they were just handing it to the South Koreans.
They did?
Yes.
Are they South Korean good at that? I didn't know that.
I don't know.
I don't really
understand curling. But so you're an intern as well?
Yeah. Yeah. I am an intern at the high school. I don't do a lot, though. I'm more interested in how the school is run and when what happens and how to teach. My background is in engineering. And I'm trying to kind of switch career, maybe, depending on how it goes.
So you've probably gathered by now that today's theme is interns. Young people, usually, not always, but people who are inspired and hopefully bring some of that inspiration to Youth Initiative High School. I would like to get a little bit of an idea of how you all found us. Jennifer, now you're the one... You kind of snuck in a little bit.
Sure did.
Yeah, like, I like that about... We will get an intern and then a sort of shadow intern. I remember once we had a fellow named William Ehlis from... He was from Germany. And then all of a sudden, like, somewhere around February, his very muscular friend, Nick Barton... who is this fiery red hair just came in and just started interning. That doesn't describe you necessarily, but how did you...
That's a pretty accurate description of me.
Actually,
really muscular red hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I moved to Viroqua to be a student at Thoreau College, and teaching was something that was kind of at the back of my mind. I was a teaching assistant in a computer science class at my college. And I kind of came to Thoreau College with this, like, I'm studying computer science. I don't know what I want to do with that. But teaching was always this thing that I thought of. And Jacob Hunt, the director of Thoreau College and a founding student at Youth Initiative.
Indeed.
Kind of, I think I said it in passing, and he saw that, and he, you know, sent an email to Logan and Vicky, was like, Jennifer's going to be in your math classes now, if that's okay. So I was kind of aided by outside influence. You know, Jacob Hunt enabled me to come and shadow, and then eventually student teach and substitute teach. But I think I went to the beginning of the year all school meeting potluck with Jacob, who was the intern, and I like really took to the like heart and soul that I was seeing. Really seems like youth is a kind of beating heart at the center of the Viroqua community, and I was really drawn to that and have loved being there, even if I snuck in.
Oh, you're welcome to sneak in, and you're welcome to stay. And Jacob, you and I go way back.
Way back.
Way back. I knew Jacob when he was knee-high to a grasshopper.
That was...
which was 4 years during COVID.
Yeah, 18, I think. I was the
you
age,
were 18
the
years
age
old.
Now of some of our students.
Wow. And look at how he's grown.
Has he? Can you explain him? How was he when he was 18?
Pretty similar.
Yes.
He was, you know, same sense. I think the style was similar. The boots. I remember the boots. I remember there was a sort of army surplus coat. Mm. The hair was a little bit more wild, but similar.
Glasses?
Same I don't know if they were the same, but they weren't radically different. And he helped me teach... during a crazy time during COVID when we had split the school up into what we called micro schools. They were like these little splinter cells of learning. And we were actually teaching Dos Passos USA trilogy in a bar.
Yeah, just down the street
just
from
down the
where
street
we're
from
recording
here.
Right now in WDRT Studios.
That's
a bar called The Rooted Spoon, if I remember correctly.
It was called The Rooted Spoon. And it's since been sold. I don't know. What is there now? I don't actually know.
That's now, I think, an extension of the Viroqua
market. Oh, the market. Yeah. Okay. So, and we just had a wonderful time.
Yeah. I remember that every day we would all shuffle in out of the snow, and we would all sit, and I think Matt would turn the lights off, and... we would close our eyes and he would read from Walt Whitman's Song of Myself.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the class, we made it to the end of that very long poem.
Yeah, we did.
And we made it to the end of this very long, very strange American modernist novel that I had never heard of. I don't think most people that I've talked to since have heard of it.
Really?
No.
Oh, they should check it out. Dos Passos.
But our reading of this book involved, and this was where I plugged in, trawling through the internet for songs, newspaper scans, images, political cartoons that were all woven into this tapestry of a Ulysses-esque stream of consciousness documentary novel of the United States between the years 1910 and 1930 or something.
Yeah. Multifocal. It's really beautiful. It's three novels, technically, but they are all like really one sort of 1,200-page book.
Mm-hmm. And we made our way through that book and we created a guide for future readers of the book.
One that I'm sure is...
well used.
Oh, I'm sure daily. Mm. Yeah. Mm. We'll post the website URL in our podcast.
In the show notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really good. In the show notes. Do we have show notes? I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, we have show notes.
We do?
Yeah.
We have a great producer, Logan Gazelle, and apparently he's introduced show notes. So now you're back for round two.
That's right. And so...
bigger, better, stronger.
I showed up that first time at Youth Initiative. I sat in on three classes. That was advanced literature from there, I went to civics and native cultures. And that was during a period early in the history of Thoreau College, which, of course, in many ways grew out of Youth Initiative High School. And in those days, we were pioneering a new spring semester program, and a big part of that program consisted of internships in town. So people were out working with Maple Valley maple sugarers, or Driftless Books and Music, or Driftless Provisions, and I was an intern here at Youth Initiative. But as you said, this was COVID. This was what were called micro schools.
Yes.
And I met perhaps only 20 to 30 students at that time. And I never set foot in our Court Street Landmark Center building.
Sad.
And so in a certain way, showing up here this fall felt still like
totally new.
Like something I hadn't experienced. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now, Ina, well, both of you have mentioned on multiple occasions here Thoreau College, which from our perspective with interns is sort of like the dark side of the moon. Like, interns show up from Thoreau College, and then they go, like, even in a day's course of a day, then they'll go back to Thoreau College. Nobody actually knows what happens at Thoreau College. Just interesting people sort of seep out of it to inhabit our space, and then somehow are soaked back in at unpredictable times of the day or week or even month. And they talk about things like fellowships and workshops, things like this. What do you do at Thoreau College? Could you encapsulate what is done at Thoreau College in, say, 45 seconds?
I really want to know, too.
45 seconds, Jennifer. Can you do it?
I think the big part of Thoreau College is that it's really hard to explain. It's encapsulates a lot of things. I think the best, most concise way to describe it is through the five pillars. So Thoreau College's five pillars are academics, labor, art, community, and nature. I think that's five.
Nice.
And so there is like a formalized academic component. You're reading, you're writing, you're in seminars 3 days a week. And then there's also, there's a farm, and there are grapes, and you keep a garden, and there's sheep and pigs and chickens, and you learn to raise animals, slaughter animals, process animals, amongst other kind of labor-y projects. Art, we had a watercolor class and a paper mache mask making class. Those were like longer things, and then some shorter projects. And then nature, we had a la Henry David Thoreau wilderness solos, where you go out in nature for 24 hours to 5 days, depending on the time of the year, and kind of see what being alone in nature for an extended period of time sparks for you creatively or, you know, experientially. And then also some group trips. Actually, the spring semester of Thoreau College is on a 5-day winter camping trip as we speak. So that's something that's similar to Youth Initiative. And then we did a canoe trip on the Boundary Waters and on the Lower Wisconsin River. And then community, part of Thoreau College's kind of project is preparing young people to be productive members of their communities. Viroqua is a town unlike anywhere I've ever been, with what feels like, you know, what America, small town America, could have been, but doesn't, you know, seem to be very many places. You know, people don't lock their cars or their houses. There's like a strong sense of care and support and a lively atmosphere, and learning how to be a good neighbor and to be a good roommate and a good member of community is, I actually think, a really central part of what it means to be at Thoreau College.
That's a really good description. I mean, it was a little longer than 45 seconds.
Sorry.
But you know what? You can't stuff all that wonder and greatness into 45 seconds. And I will say that if, you know, for as many times as I've heard Viroqua described with the phrase, no one locks their car or house, I mean, at some point, someone's going to catch on to this.
Yeah, I was like, man.
You know, like...
We're making good a good advertisement for
Yeah, come and steal yes. every car yes. in this town. You can take them. There's... The keys are in it. Just drive off. If they got maybe 500-600, an army of car thieves, they could make an absolute killing. I say it all the time, too. Yeah, we don't lock our cars. Mm. It's true. Mm. Break into our house while you're at it. Make yourself a sandwich. And Ina,
yeah,
you are the most furthest away you have come. I think you might be hold the Youth Initiative High School record for longest distance traveled to an internship.
Oh, that's a nice record to hold.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, that's
nuts. How many kilometers, I guess you would say, is it from Sweden to Viroqua?
I knew that at one point because people would ask me.
Right.
But I don't remember.
Ballpark? 10,000?
No. No.
Not that much? Higher or lower? Lower.
Lower.
It's probably got to be 5,000 miles. 4,000 miles? 5,000 miles.
I wish I knew.
Okay. It's a long way,
and
though.
And it doesn't matter because I say it in kilometers. Nobody's going to know anyway.
That's true. That's true. And you are from... An urban area? No, you're from a little town.
Mm-hmm. Similar to this.
Okay.
No radio station, though.
No mm-hmm. community radio station?
No, we don't do that.
You don't do community things?
No, we don't. We don't care about that.
In Sweden?
Yeah.
Okay, so how did you... Sweden is a nice place, though.
Oh, it's a great place. Yes. You know, you're alone all the time, taking care of yourself. It's wonderful.
Wow. Sounds.
You know, you don't have to lock your cars either. Nobody cares, you know? They have their own things.
Right.
They don't need
the
to
steal.
The
government bought them a car.
Yes, they don't
yeah,
need to
I
steal.
Mean, what,
it's perfect.
Sounds nice. They've got light rail.
What is light rail?
Okay, they don't. Public transportation.
Oh, of course.
Like you can get on a train and commute to work.
Yes.
Conveniently.
Yes.
And it doesn't smell like urine.
No. And you can bring your bike. So if you want to, like, go on a bus there and bike back, it's perfect.
So what on earth ever led you to come here to the United States of America? How did you find us?
So I was driving past here 2 years ago or something like that. And the guy I was dating said to me that this is the only place that you can ever live in Wisconsin.
Because they don't lock their cars? Or
yeah.
what was the...
It was... I think mostly it was a food thing. I had a hard time in the Dells when we were living to eat because I don't like fast food that much.
Oh, well, then the Dells would be tough.
Mm-hmm. And Del Bar was too expensive, so, you know.
Okay.
And then, so he said that this is going to be your place. And I was like, yeah, we'll see, you know. And then... A couple years later, I always have had an affinity for Wisconsin, believe it or not. So when I first came here like 10 years ago, I thought that this was a crazy place, but somehow I liked it. And then I kind of kept coming back. And when I was starting to take my teaching credentials, I figured like, I want to be in a place where I can also be at a school at the same time I'm studying, so I can get that both, because I love that. That's my favorite, when I can read and see things going on at the same time.
Mm.
And we don't have Waldorf education in Sweden.
No.
You can say that you have, but it's not really true, because you need to have the same, you need to grade the same way.
Okay. It's more just the government education system is
yes.
more standardized.
Yeah, much more standardized. So I was like, where should I go to find a school that is a little bit alternative? Because that would be fun. I don't want to do like an internship at a Swedish school. That's so boring. And I mean, don't get paid for that.
Oof.
Oh, no. So I was like,
and then you heard about our stipend. You were like, yeah, I'm going to get rich.
Yeah. Cause And then I Googled Viroqua Waldorf School, and I sent this long email, mm-hmm. like really long, you know, really formal, like And I really, you know, tried my best. I've been doing a lot of those things, right? When I was working at a bank, you have to be very formal. So I wrote this very formal email, and I got this really short, kind of awkward response from Matt.
Really?
And I was so happy because I was writing this really long email, and then in the end, I send another little email saying, oh my God, math and yoga together, that's a great combination. And I thought like, yeah, maybe I'm you know, I'm fun too. I'm not all, you know, I'm not only.
Oh, I said that.
No, I said that.
You said math and yoga, great combination.
Yeah, and then I got a really weird message from you, and I thought, yeah, I like this guy. It'll be fun.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what was the math and yoga reference?
Signature.
That I wrote this really long email that was so formal, and then I thought to myself, like, I'm too formal. Like, this is just, like, you know? And so I had to send another email saying, like, oh, because I saw that, Logan, that you were teaching math and yoga. And so I was saying, like, that's an amazing combination because I want it to be fun, you know?
For the record, I don't teach them at the same time.
And nothing says fun like yoga.
Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking. I was trying my best.
You did a great job. Thank you. I will say it's a major red flag for me when I get an email over 400 words.
Was it over 400 words?
I don't know, but I don't remember it. I mean, you're explaining it as though it was very long. But I do remember that immediately I felt like, well, this person is a human.
Mm-hmm.
And she might fit in here.
Mm-hmm.
She likes, what is it, textil-sled.
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 Handwork.
Handwork. Mm-hmm. We do textil-sled here, I thought to myself. And then, what?
Yeah, that is.
How is my accent?
Try again.
Textil-sled.
Yeah, we can work on that.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, this is a person that has a sense of humor.
Mm. Sometimes.
We can't all have a sense of humor all the time.
Oh, that would be so not appreciated. Like,
appropriate.
Yeah, there we go. Textil-sled.
Textil-sled. So... and then we had a Zoom call, and then it just sort of went from there.
You
and
were
then
late.
I was late to the Zoom call?
Yeah.
How late?
Pretty late.
Under 10 minutes late.
No, over 10 minutes late.
Oh, that must have been a time zone issue.
Okay, definitely.
Wow. What excuse did I give?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I just didn't care.
Yeah, no.
I just did not respect your time.
No, not at all. And I thought, I like this guy.
Yeah. This guy writes weird emails and doesn't respect people's time.
I'm going.
This is perfect. So then we met a nice man. What was his name?
Oh my God! Yeah, we had to find this guy from the Swedish
to get
American
you a J-1 visa.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Oh, what was
I remember
his name?
That video call.
Yeah, do you remember that video call?
But I don't remember his name. But he was very nice.
Matt. No.
Chris. Steve.
Ted. Ted.
Ted.
It was Ted.
And,
yeah.
And he, during our video call, he had, apparently, he was about 4 inches away from his camera. Like, all I could see was his super close-up of his, like, mouth, stubbly chin, and Adam's apple. And we had a nice, like, 30-minute conversation just with him. God. And he was very nice. And he said, oh, yeah, they never deny a visa from Sweden.
Oh, he said that?
Yeah, he said, we've had, all year, we haven't had a single visa denied.
That's amazing. We are a good country, yeah.
Yeah, apparently. Mm. In the eyes of someone.
Mm, in the eyes of
not
the Americans.
Not of the Norwegians, though.
No. Did your visa get denied, Ina?
Yeah, we snuck her into Canada.
No, but I was so nervous about it.
Yeah, so it all went well. And now here we all are in our little internship.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping, you know... I've taught how many classes? So Jacob and I have taught three classes together. History of Technology, American Literature.
Hero's Journey.
That's it, I think.
So far.
Yeah, so, and you're my linguist guy. You're my language guy.
Mm-hmm.
I always turn to Jacob when I have an etymology question. And I was thinking this afternoon, like, we're going to have this intern podcast. And what intern sounds like a half a word.
Internship,
right? But an intern as a how is that related? International, internal, intern.
Well, yeah. I mean, it would make you think that internal is something related to interns,
right?
But rather, I mean, I think Internment is what I think of.
Internment. Isn't that like an internment camp?
Yes, is like...
I don't think that's
imprisonment.
Right, there is that. There's internment. This is troubling.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would say I don't know what Latin root that turn is.
Right,
but that's I think the sense is just
it's similar to
being internal or being internal, being
internalized.
Held inside,
we've internalized you.
You've turned us into interns, yes.
We've internalized you. We've, yes. Like, yeah, we've.
But in another way, it's like you're the man on the inside. You know, you are representing something else, be it the Swedish educational system, the Thoreau College for us. You're gathering insight.
You're a mole
inside a place without belonging to it, right?
Okay.
I mean, that's the feeling it gives me.
But what is it to be an intern, though? Like, the only thing that's different from a regular job is you don't get paid.
So. Well, in America, I mean, the idea is that you are getting people coffee.
Yeah.
Yes.
And literally not... We've had dozens, maybe, of interns. I've never once been brought a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Nobody has brought me a cup of coffee.
Okay,
I don't drink coffee, but... It would be nice to be asked, yes. Honestly.
Well, in the other German...
Can I say that I don't know if that's here, but in Sweden, if you like the teacher, you will give him or her an apple.
Yes, that is a
that's
culture.
Universal.
Yes. Yes. Is that universal? You think that happens in Thailand? They're like, I like the teacher, I'm going to bring them an apple. Do they even have apples in Thailand?
No, in Thailand? I don't know what they have in Thailand.
That's Thailand? Formerly the Kingdom of Siam?
Maybe banana.
Could be.
Banana. I mean, do apples grow in tropical climates?
No, they don't.
They don't.
No, not, no, I don't think so. No.
She would know. She's an environmental engineer.
Interesting. I think,
Right? I mean, you're...
Yeah, that's what I am.
Climate, but, you do the climate thing.
Yeah, I don't think we ever was taught about fruit, though. That's more of a travel kind of thing. You know, what kind of fruit do I want? Now I'm in Thailand.
Have you ever been to Thailand?
To Thailand? No, I have not been to Thailand yet.
Hmm. Well, what I've heard is that...
Yes.
Due to, you know, sort of British occupation and so on, it is actually a lot easier to get things like apples in China.
In China? Have
India.
You been to China?
No, but... I have good sources on this.
So,
and whereas, like,
he
to
always
get, to
have
get
good
China,
sources.
So British colonialists went to China.
Yeah.
They went to India. They planted apple trees.
Maybe. I mean, think about, we have ginkgo trees lining our streets.
I just think of an apple as like that it would sort of mold.
Or in some sense, like it's
in a tropical
there's some kind of infrastructure that's bringing.
Because it's also the leaves of the apple tree will fall. Like, it needs seasons. You can't have an apple tree in a climate that isn't.
No,
formed, so
yeah.
That...
We don't trust you.
But at the very least, that there's a steady flow of these. I mean, the
imported
apple.
Apples.
The apple is not a Western. Fruit, of course, it's a Near Eastern,
Middle Eastern, yes. Everything is,
but
all food.
That basically, I think in some sense, it's easier to get Western fruits in Asia than it is to get Asian fruits in the West.
No way.
It's possible.
You mean like growing?
No, like importing, like going to the grocery store, getting an apple versus going to the grocery store and getting like durian. Which
I don't think
no one would want anyway.
So on the topic of what it means to thrive in an environment that you were not originally from.
Right.
Good. Jake.
Excellent. Someone's hosting this podcast.
What does being an intern mean to you, Jacob?
Well, I'm glad that we have someone from another Germanic language here, because in my sense, and I'm not sure if this is true, because I think this is a newish cultural phenomenon, but in German, at least, we don't call them interns, we call them Praktikant.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What do you call them in Swedish?
Praktikant. Yeah. Das stimmt.
So it's just like this is like a medieval, like a apprentice?
Yeah. So
that comes from what you would say practice.
Right.
Praktikant. You practice.
Okay.
Yes. So, but also, yeah, I mean, I wonder about that, because there is this like practice, chiropractic, like there is a sense, I think, of sort of forming as well, that you're not just practicing, but you're being formed, in the sense that things which are, well, at least on an etymological level, the German word prächten is to shape.
Okay. And so how is this experience shaping you? Could you each share like you all have been here at least a couple months. How has your shape changed? It doesn't have to be the shape of your body. It could be.
No, that's to Paul Grenier, who I was just at the chiropractor.
Okay, yes. Yeah. We love Paul Grenier.
Oh, we love Paul Grenier. And he was
We love Paula even more, though, just for the
you
record.
You do?
Oh, absolutely.
I think they're pretty similar to me, yeah.
Yeah, but I would take Paula over Paul any day. Yeah.
But Paul was telling me that the things I tell my body is, if I don't tell them that, that's better. So I shouldn't be saying, like, I'm formed in this way, because I am. So I want to say what I want to be formed as, and that's what I'm going to become.
Aspirational.
So the question from Paul here is, what do you want this experience to form you as?
Do you have an answer for that one, Ina?
No, I was looking at Jacob, kind of.
You think he has an answer?
Yeah, yeah. I kind of was a little stuck with my question, so I didn't figure out an answer yet.
That's good.
Yeah, got to work on it.
Well, I'll say that I came into high school teaching not willingly.
Those who can't do teach,
yes,
Jacob.
Or at least in the sense that I had misgivings about it because my parents are both high school teachers.
Oh, I did not know.
Yes.
Okay.
And
that's the kind of stuff we don't talk about at home. We should.
Yes. So
it's true.
So I did have a sense of what it meant to be a high school teacher. And
what was that sense?
From the family business.
Exhaustion. Poor pay.
Terrible pay. Frustration.
You're on the right track so far, but what about the bliss?
Absolute bliss as well. Though I think I didn't get to see that as a kid.
Right. Right.
I think I got, you know, the sense that, you know, they were at best nobly fighting with a very large and stifling bureaucracy that was that was at times crushing, and at other times at least irritating.
Okay.
And so anyway, high school teaching was not on my radar. I now find myself wondering, am I becoming my father? Am I becoming my mother?
Wow. So early too.
Too early. Oh my God.
But I don't think so. I mean, I would say that, whatever notions I had of high school teaching were not big in my mind when I showed up here, and they still really haven't played a lot of a role in how I think about what I do now. So I think we had a conversation a little while ago, Matt, in which you said, in some sense, like, you don't necessarily think of yourself as a teacher.
No, I don't. Never have.
But rather as someone who talks to people about ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I just like how everyone's bringing up things I have said in the past. That could go down a really bad trail. But yes, I did say that, and I have said it on many occasions, because it is repeatedly kind of surprising to me that I've been doing this for 20 years now, and I don't think about teaching.
Yeah, yeah, and I think what I've found in myself is just, you know, is not in any role that I've been putting on that wasn't familiar to me, whether that was one that I had seen in my own education, seen my parents putting on. But I've just noticed in myself a sort of subtler interchange that has to do just with attention, with finding it far more interesting to hear people talk about what they think, what they know, what they've experienced, Even if it's not articulate, even if it's not particularly coherent, that sense of listening and in some way inviting response in conversations about ideas, in exchanges of knowledge, that's something that I just notice myself doing more, paying attention to those.
You're a better listener.
I think so.
I have to say that your mom usually calls on the landline, and I've spoken to her. She's really nice.
She's super nice.
Yeah, so if you turn out like her, you'll be fine.
So Ina and Jacob, that's a very, I don't want to interrupt that beautiful maternal honoring. But Ina and Jacob, just for the, you know, to keep everyone abreast of what's going on here, they live in the same house. They live in a bunkhouse owned by Thoreau College. With Will.
That's right.
Jacob's partner, who we thought was Jennifer for a long time. There mm-hmm. was a confusion. It had to do with you going, you know, you showed up at the potluck where, who is this lady? And he had talked about his partner. Well, we just figured, well, that's Will.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah.
Then there were two Wills.
It got weird for a minute, but we all sorted it out.
I didn't know about this.
I know. No, you. No one told you.
Someone asked me if I was Will once.
Yeah, well,
but I didn't know.
People thought it dozens of times.
Oh,
yeah, they were like, yeah. Oh. It's fine now. It's all sorted. It's all sorted. No need to feel weird about it. It's all sorted. But you, Jennifer, how have you changed in your short time here?
Yeah. There's so many things I could say. I'm always someone who has loved learning. I was such a nerdy kid. Like, I loved school growing up, like all the way actually through starting college probably. I had like this just curiosity. I think I always gravitated towards like math and science, which is a little bit less about ideas, and more about, I'd say, problem solving. There's obviously ideas in math and science. But I always kind of liked it for its purity, for its, you know, ability to look at something and like play with it a little bit. And I think, and I was always someone like, I was good at math as a kid. You know, everyone was like, oh, you should study math. That's like the right thing to do if you're good at math. and like it.
Do not deny the Lord's gift.
That's a strong phrasing. Probably, but
that's what they meant, though.
Right.
Yeah.
She's Jewish.
If they have a Lord.
Oh.
Oh my God.
They have the original Lord, the OG Lord.
Oh, I didn't know.
Oh yeah.
You know, we don't know that in Sweden.
I know you're all atheists.
Yeah, I know.
I know.
Sorry.
I know. Yes, Jennifer. So you were encouraged to pursue mathematics.
I was, and I think that what I kind of have gotten very interested in the last couple months is like what it means to learn math. I think that Youth Initiative is an alternative school. It does like a lot of things really weirdly and differently, and it's also a really small school that is taking students from a lot of different backgrounds, and a lot of different, you know, prior experiences with math. And so I think, you know, I have worked in a very limited capacity as a teacher in a very different setting. And it, like, math is kind of a hard thing to explain to someone. Like, it is like, you know, sometimes you have this thing and you're like, it's like kind of, it's there. Like,
right.
You just need to see it.
That's what I've always thought. I don't understand math teaching. I just like, if you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. What else do we have to talk about?
No, I don't think that's true.
No, I mean, I know it's clearly not true. Yeah. People learn it and they teach it, but I just have, it doesn't, I don't understand it.
And that, I mean, that's something I think that I've gotten really, really interested in and why we study math. I think a lot of people have a like preconceived notion of like, I don't need to know how to do geometry to live in the world productively. I don't need to know how to do calculus to do my taxes. But I think like seeing math for what it really is, which is a tool for critical thinking and problem solving and doing things that are hard and stretch your brain out. I mean, in a way that's a lot like, I'm not a teacher. I'm a speaker of ideas and a listener of ideas. And I, there's something very idealistic about that. And I also am like really still pretty darn bad at explaining things. So I think I've like grown in my ability to like figure out how to teach a subject that is, it is technical in nature. You know, there, there often is a right and a wrong. And like thinking about what it means to do math has been really exciting. And also like I kind of walked in, I was like, oh, teaching sounds interesting. But it is really something I feel really excited about and feel really, you know, more motivated to go back in and finish my degree and to go back and, you know, have something in the future that I can do vocationally that is exciting and engaging and interesting.
Yeah.
So that's how I've been shaped.
Awesome. I mean, I agree that teach, if I were to think about teaching, I guess I would say like it really just is communicating. But if you want to communicate something, you yourself have to have a very clear idea of what you're wanting to communicate. And it's the best way to learn. That's what, I mean, teaching is a wonderful way to crystallize your, the ideas that you think you know. But maybe when you start telling them to someone else, you realize, oh, there's a lot more to this.
Yeah, or it's stupid.
possibly. Possibly.
It happens to me a lot.
Does
of
it?
Times.
You're like, I actually don't even.
That sounded so good in my head.
You know? Oh, wow. Yeah, there's those moments as well. Yeah. You've been really getting into the calculus, though.
Yeah, I love math. I was really bad at math when I was in high school.
But still went into engineering.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to do something hard. So I picked the thing I was worst at.
For real?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. It didn't give me a good career, though, because I don't really want to work as an engineer. But it was amazing to do that. Yeah. And it's a, I don't know, it feels like those years were incredibly valuable and they paid off, like in a way that I didn't want to do something that I thought I can read this or, you know, I wanted to do something that I thought that I cannot do this on my own. I just really can't. And I need all the help I can get.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought it all just came so easily to you.
Mm-mm.
No.
I think I did, we had 5 math classes. I failed them all at least 3 times, all of them. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is a great biography here.
Mm-hmm.
And you rose from the ashes. You pulled yourself up.
Yeah, I didn't think I could do it. In the end, I was like, I still can't believe I finished. Yeah, it was so hard.
Well, so this is something I'm thinking about a lot. Do you think that failure was important?
Oh, yeah, a lot. Because I was really good at the social science that I did in high school. And I was also like a good student. And I was from a little town, very rural, not very academic. And so I was always really good in school. And it was amazing to feel really bad. Because it just gives you a sense of like, I don't know, that your worth is not tied to. It felt like that the first couple of times, right? You know, everybody else was able to manage and I had to redo it. But after a time, it's like, wait, this is getting, like, I know this now. If I would do a math test now, I would actually be able to pull it off because I had to repeat it so many times. But so I definitely feel like that failure like it wasn't a failure because I did the best I could, but it was definitely awesome. Yeah.
Because in my own case, I am a passionate reader, a person who does believe that a human life can be spent and should be spent trying to know everything or come as close to it as you can. And yet, as a...
let him do his thing.
Let him cook.
Let him cook.
That's what the young people would say, I think.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I might be 5 years. I'm usually about 5 years behind. Maybe they said that 5 years ago.
Yeah.
As a high school student, up until the age of 18, I was not a reader. I was actually pretty bored by books, by ideas. And I sort of, in some way, think of that, I don't know what you would call it, late acquisition or, in a certain sense, failure. During my sort of high school formative years, as really important for becoming someone who cares deeply about learning in my adult life. I do have this sense in some way that I'm making up for lost time, that this is not some thing that was forced into me, but really something that I resisted until the last moment, when sort of due to a perfect windfall, I had one fantastic teacher in high school. His name was Paul Nam. He had just been left a college teaching job at Occidental College. And he came in and he gave us something like a freshman or sophomore class in political philosophy, texts that were way too hard for any of us to understand, and taught with rigor and devotion and a sense that you not only will find this interesting, but you must understand this. You must. This deeply concerns your being as citizens of a democracy, as people faced with making ethical choices. That was the fall of my senior year, late 2019. Then that rolled over into the spring of 2020. School was canceled. Mm-hmm. That was my senior spring. And I had just now a pile of books and a deep desire to learn and didn't have to go to school. And so I always think about this in terms of teaching, because I do want to set the students on fire. I do want, like, the result of being in high school, not some number of facts or some number of books read, but really, even if you go through school without completing all that much intellectual work, to be hungry for more. And so I think about these things like failure or, yeah, what would you call it, late blooming in an intellectual sense, as possibly really important for teaching.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, for sure. This is a fascinating conversation. Jennifer and I seem to be the only ones that were good at high school.
I was good at high school.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I was just not good at math, okay?
Okay.
Don't go there.
Hey, let's all take a deep breath. Death. All right. We're all good at high school now, though. what has been... what are we... What's the time yet? Been here?
We're really at about a minute mark.
Okay. This is usually what we usually close around this time. But I'd like to know, I guess, maybe one thing each of you have found that's been kind of, we've been talking about challenges and failure, and like what has been one of the more difficult things that you've had to sort of wrestle with doing this new thing here at Youth Initiative High School?
Yeah. Being myself.
Being yourself.
Yeah, it's always tough.
Is that something that you experience in your native environment?
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. Like, even in Sweden.
Yeah.
And then here, probably maybe even more difficult. You got everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We want you to do that.
Be myself?
I think.
Yeah, you don't know.
Yeah, you know, you never know.
You really don't know.
Yeah, you don't know.
We got to try that out first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but we do.
Thanks.
Yeah. What about you, Jennifer?
For like the first month I was in Vicky's geometry class, I just, every time I tried to explain something, I felt like I was doing a horrible job. And I think probably I was. And for me, the and I guess this actually goes to what we were just talking about. For me, the real challenge was like overcoming the fact that you're not going to jump into something that you don't have very much experience with and immediately be good at it.
Yeah.
Teaching is knowing how to be an effective transmitter of knowledge is not something that's like, well, it's not intrinsic inherent to me. And I think being like, oh, I'm going to come in and I'm going to be a little bad at this at first, and I'm going to learn to get better. And that actually takes time and diligent effort. It's not going to happen without putting a little work in. Was a challenge, but I also feel like I saw myself improving in my ways to explain things, and also relationships. Like I jumped in, and I think early November, to like a bunch of people who have like known each other since they were 5 years old.
Right.
And I'm you know, this like 20-year-old girl that's just kind of showed up, and
snuck in
as it were. So that was a challenge that also was really rewarding to pursue.
I would say one of the hardest things is something I'm not sure if every teacher experiences it, but the way I experienced it was something like the first session I went into, and that was Matt's American literature class. I wrote about 5 pages of notes of what I was going to say in class.
oh my God.
And I didn't end up saying any of them. And in a certain sense, the class went off in a totally different direction, unlike what I thought it was, what we were going to talk about. You know, the second session, you show up and you think, well, that was great. We were just improvising. And you show up with no notes.
And then you really needed them.
And then you really need them, yeah.
Yeah.
So that balance between preparation and improvisation, mm-hmm. I think, is
that's a good one.
A very...
Totally.
It's a moving target, too. You know, whether I'm teaching psychology, which I'm just finishing up now, that's one that requires usually a lot more preparation in a way. And whether that's because it verges on the scientific, I'm not sure, where I am more of a humanist. And I do believe in some sense that, that humanities teaching is more about ideas and less about knowledge, or more about stimulating thinking. And whereas I'm about to start teaching a philosophy class, and I think that one, in honor of the sort of conversational, dialectical way of philosophizing in authors like Plato, there is room for that sort of off-the-cuff, improvisational style rather than a lecture.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I can say on behalf of, I think, all of our school, that when we have interns like you, it really, I mean, your energy, your perspective, just being able to catch little glimpses of seeing the school through your fresh eyes is just invaluable. I know that you are not making a lot or any money, but you're providing a great, great service for not just the students, but also the teachers, for sure. So,
for sure. I want to say special thanks to, well, all three of you for being in classes with me in various degrees.
I want to be a high school student again when I'm here.
I don't think we can do that.
You don't? I can.
Well, I mean, yeah, but in a way you are, you know, like every teacher should be a student.
Right. Like I'm sitting in classes right now.
So.
Yeah, I can pass for 16. Definitely.
Let's just keep that eternal student alive, like a flame within us. Okay?
Set them on.
Can we all agree to that?
Yes.
All right.
I agree.
I agree.
I agree.
I also agree.
Thank you.